Do you ever feel stuck, like you're living your life on autopilot? Are you ready to shift into high gear and reach the success you so richly deserve? Welcome to the Play Big Movement podcast. I am your host, Sharon Lecter, entrepreneur, business strategist, and best-selling author. Playing big is not about settling for good enough or being comfortable. It is about reaching your highest potential and achieving your greatest success. Join me in my Play Big movement as I interview top experts in business, money, and entrepreneurship, all ready to serve you and to help you play big, be number one in your field, live your legacy, and create maximum impact. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast. And I'm excited today because we're together with our guests. Usually we're in two separate communities. So I'm excited to have Sharon Lamb Hartman. I should say Dr. Sharon Lamb Hartman with us today. And we've known each other for several years. We met each other through Women Presence Organization and was really intrigued with the things that she was doing. And really, her Inside Out Learning company is a high-level executive coaching, and as you all know, my personal success equation. She also has her own equation we're going to be talking about. But what I love about it is that she's a real testament to power of association, and her background is just incredible. So share a little bit about, welcome, number
Thank
one.
You. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
And I'm excited. She's working on a book, so that's news to come. But tell us a little bit about little Sharon. We got double Sharon.
Double Sharon.
Yes. Talk about a little bit about your background, where you grew up and how you got to where you are today.
Absolutely. So I grew up outside of Buffalo, New York, in a little town called Swarmville. And it was a great town. Everyone knew each other. We even had a Swarmville wave, as we would pass people. And my father put a very big priority on education. Mm-hmm. So he was a World War II veteran, and he fought on the front lines. He had an eighth grade education, and he was one of the most brilliant men I've ever known. But he wanted all of his children to have the education he didn't have. So he put a real priority on that and said, I want you to go to college. And I became a professional student, I think, because I not only went
to... There's probably a few of those watching.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm an overachiever with any one of you. I'm actually writing another book called Overachievers Anonymous because I need it. And but I really went from a double major in college in both psychology and business to Cornell University, where I received my master's in industrial and labor relations, and then went to Columbia University to get my doctorate in leadership and organization development. So, and it's very funny because all of my sisters also did that same kind of a path that, we really...
How many siblings do you have?
I have three sisters, and all of them have either advanced degrees or a law degree. So we really... excelled in school and got that education that our father really said is so important in life. And I'm very grateful for that because I never even thought otherwise. To not go to school wasn't even an option.
And being an overachiever is part of playing big. And as a company, you're now playing in the big pond. You're dealing with top Fortune 50 companies.
Right? Yes.
And, bringing in executive training and leadership to them. So you also, did you go to a program at Stanford? At Harvard, I think?
We went to talk to Harvard about possibly bringing our presentation skills program into their program. Mm-hmm. But I was an adjunct faculty member, I still am, at Columbia University in New York, where I received my doctorate, and also have done adjunct faculty work at the Center for Creative Leadership.
Wonderful.
Which is a big leadership development company.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
So, you deal with companies like Boeing and just top end, and you travel all over the world doing executive leadership.
Yes.
But your style is to bring it down to where it's a little simpler. And what I love, and in fact, full disclosure, I introduced Sharon to Philip, our oldest son, and Philip now does some of the training for her. And it's been a great opportunity for him, and he loves it, and he loves working with you. So thank you for that.
And we love him. So thank you for that. He is fabulous in front of the room. And Sharon said that when he was even growing up, he was always like in a suit and tie and dress. I mean, he exudes executive presence, which is so much of what we teach.
Yeah, it helps that he's 6'5" and a half.
Yeah.
But he is a great trainer and loves, he loves being in front of the room, but mainly reaching individuals and giving them the skills they need to go to the next level. So your topics that you teach, executive presence, presentation skills, those are all things that he's taught before in other venues. And so it gives him the opportunity to exercise his best skills as well. So
absolutely,
I think it's a great opportunity. But tell us a little bit of it, because part of you talk about authenticity code. That's kind of part of the bones of your presentation and your training. Tell us, what does authenticity code mean to you?
Yeah, that's a great question, Sharon. So one thing that I've found is really my passion and calling in life is to help leaders become more authentic in their presence, mm-hmm, and in who they truly are as a leader. So not trying to be someone that they think they should be, but really being who they truly are. And I define authenticity as your most powerful way of adding value by expressing your unique gifts and talents for your chosen audience. And so it's really, what's your most powerful way of adding value to your chosen for your chosen audience? And the code is actually your presence plus your audience plus your presentation equals your success. And that is, if you miss one of those three ingredients, you won't be as successful as you could be.
It's like my three-legged stool, but just with different labels, but they're pretty close. You know, one is your platform, whatever your product or service is, and then your ability to communicate it.
So, there you go. Yeah. Exactly. That is very.
And I go, what happens when one leg of a three-legged stool is not long enough?
That's
right. Nothing good. So
yeah,
it's important to concentrate on all three. So I love that, because it's your presence, your audience, and your presentation. And it really truly is. Because one of the things that I find that other speakers don't do is, mm-hmm, when I'm invited to come speak somewhere, I study the audience.
Yes.
I want, whether it's a geographic difference, like I was just speaking to the President's Summit in Copenhagen. And so vast majority of them were from Western Europe or Muslim Scandinavia countries. So I studied up on the current economic situation over there so that I could be speaking to them based on things that are pertinent to them at the time. Whereas a lot of other speakers have their talk.
Yes.
And no matter where they are, it's the talk.
Exactly.
And so it's important to really understand your audience and also to be able to read the audience when you're speaking.
That's so critical as well. That your audience part of the code, it includes what you do naturally, mm-hmm, and why you're such a powerful speaker is you take the time to study the audience. You know, what's important to them? What would they really benefit from? What are they looking for? What hooks them? What are they willing to compromise? Questions like that you can ask yourself in advance. But then, like you said, when you're also there, are you reading the audience? And how do you respond to their questions is another really important, because people always will ask questions and you need to know, how do you respond in an appropriate way, in a respectful way? And to read the audience, like, am I losing them? Mm-hmm. Are we keeping the energy up in the room? Why is someone looking at their phone or whatever that might be? It's like to read the audience and know how to adjust to that.
When I speak, I always find two or three people, even in a large group, that are really expressive and they're really into what I'm saying. And they kind of like feed me energy,
uh-huh,
that I know I'm on the right track. But going back to Denmark, I haven't planned to talk about this today.
No, this is great.
Before I went, I kept getting these from different people. Don't expect much from the audience. You know, people from Denmark, they're very reserved. They don't react. They're very quiet. They don't participate. And I heard it so many times, it actually kind of made me mad. So as I'm on stage in front of 2,500 people, I came up, I said, I heard you guys are reserved, they don't react. I'm going to challenge that. I think that's hogwash.
I love it.
Are you going to be reserved today? No. You know, it was hysterical. So it was pretty funny. Typically, they are, more reserved. But it was like, I heard it so many times, it was like, I don't like people to be labeled. So it was pretty funny.
That's true. And then you kind of called it out, and then they, I bet they weren't reserved that day.
No. Yeah. And it, they were reserved before and after, but for me, it's like I just flipped a switch for them. But, nice. I think it's important because, knowing the audience, but more importantly, knowing how to engage the audience is really important. Mm-hmm. And so when I teach presentation skills,
yes,
I talk about, including them, not just visually and not just from what you say. That's why the top line NLP strategists say don't use PowerPoint. Well, I'm more of a teacher than a speaker. So yes. I use PowerPoint because I'm a visual learner.
Yes.
And so I want to have them hear me, but I want them to see something that validates it.
Yeah.
And then I get them involved by raising the hands or standing up so that I get the kinetic learners so that I have them involved as well. So.
Yeah. And I love that you vary that because everyone learns differently. Mm-hmm. That's why that hard and fast rule of don't use PowerPoint or use PowerPoint, I have a different perspective on that because I feel there's visual learners who really like you said, mm-hmm. to see those kind of charts. And mm-hmm. if it helps you as the presenter and that's authentic to who you are, mm-hmm. then you should go ahead and use the PowerPoint.
But I do think things have changed over the years. I
mean, yes.
It was probably 5 or 6 years ago that I realized that people wanted more authenticity. They wanted speakers not to be the experts telling them things, but to share things and to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
In fact, I had agents out of New York, and I've shared this story with the audience before, but I, about 3 years ago, brought them on board, and they said, sure, you need to be more vulnerable. And I remember I'm saying, I couldn't even say the word, blah, 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 vulnerable. What?
What did you mean? I know, right?
And so at that point in time, I actually started sharing about losing my son and, yes. trying to be a little bit more open about the downs as well as the ups. And it really has made a huge difference. Amazing the reaction mm-hmm. that I had from people in the audience of being open and being appreciative of the fact that I've shared those moments with them. So
absolutely. And, because it makes you human. Mm-hmm. So everyone, when they're listening to you, a lot of times I think, and I've seen this happen in audiences, especially when it's people of your stature and authority, and people can be like, just going all into you and wondering, wow, well, this is great for her, but what about, me? And then when you relate like a personal story like that of an obstacle you've overcome, it really helps the audience to engage and
well,
to feel real.
Give us a few of your, obviously we could be here all day.
Yes, I would love to. But
give us a couple of highlights for the folks that are watching and listening. Related to, let's start with your presence.
What okay.
Just kind of highlights of the things that you think are important that really set you apart from maybe other people.
Absolutely. So your presence, you carry your presence wherever you go. And so whether you're doing a formal presentation or a podcast like this, or whether you're doing going out to eat or walking down the hall, and we have come up with 12 executive presence qualities that really, if you practice, have been shown to really elevate your executive presence. And executive presence counts for 26%, at least 26%. I've heard the numbers be between 26% and 80% of what it takes to get promoted. So if you think about that and you are interviewing for a job and you might have this very similar background with anyone that might be competing with you for the job. But what's great is you have this presence. Mm-hmm. And so you are going to be more likely to get that job if you bring that presence. So some of the qualities are warmth. Even talking to you today, smiling, looking at each other in the eyes, turning to the camera. Those are things that are very important, that you are exuding warmth, openness. Is your body language closed with your arms folded, or are you open and open to sharing, like you said, vulnerable stories as well, so people can connect with you? There's things like clarity and confidence, and confidence is different than arrogance. So arrogance is putting yourself better than someone. Confidence is really believing in yourself and believing in what you do. So respect and trustworthiness and integrity. Integrity is so critical. to really, you know, that you walk your talk, and because people can see through it when you're not.
Oh, I tell you, it's amazing to me. I mean, I've been in this industry a long time. And one of the greatest compliments I get is, Sharon, you're the same off stage as you are on stage. And for me, that, you know, that means they see authenticity in what I'm sharing, and no matter where I am. And I think that's something that's a huge compliment to me. But at the same time, I see other people in my industry, mm-hmm. where I would never say that about them.
Yeah.
You know, what they say on stage is so incongruent with how they live their life. And it just, it gets me frustrated about the personal development industry.
Yes.
And sometimes it's like the woo-woo world. Sometimes I want to take a shower after I go to an event because, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he's up there saying that. And it's just so not true.
Yes.
So I think, and part of that is being that integrity piece that you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
Being authentic with who you mm-hmm. are and what you're talking about, and practicing living your life. So one way you can practice some of those qualities I mentioned today is pick one a week. Mm-hmm. And Benjamin Franklin used to do that when he had these qualities he would live by. Pick one a week and really practice those qualities. So I'm practicing warmth this week. And this is an ongoing process. You know, this is a lifelong learning. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to warm up my emails. I am asking people about their personal life and how things are going. There's little things like that that make a big difference in terms of connecting.
Sometimes we get so busy. We're so busy being busy that we stop. I mean, we had dinner two nights ago with dear friends of ours, and we hadn't seen them in probably 7-8 months. And it was like, what is wrong with us? You know, because the people that are close to your heart, if you distance yourself, you lose that connection. And so it was something that is true. We all do it. You know, we get busy working in our business and not work on our business or in our personal relationships. So
that's right.
Very, very, very true.
Yeah.
So when you talk about presence, it's not just your appearance. It's that warmth side, the integrity. I think that's so important. And sometimes, you know, you meet people that have come across fine in the first impression. The more you're with them, the more you realize that that was an act, not the real thing. So talk a little bit. We shared a little bit already, but talk mm-hmm. about the audience and what you teach about understanding your audience.
Absolutely. I think this is one of the most critical parts of the code, is to really tailor your message to your audience. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll hear authenticity is misperceived because many people say, well, authenticity means I'm just going to be me and people are going to relate or not. And I think it's an authentic choice who you choose as your audience. Mm-hmm. So if you are a more formal person, you might go choose more of a culture like a Boeing, or going into more of the political realm, whatever that might be. If you are more informal, you would choose to go work at Facebook or Google and fit more there. So whoever you're in front of, you have chosen. Mm-hmm. And even if you're at Facebook, you might have a customer that you still have to get dressed up for mm-hmm. and tailor your style to that audience. Mm-hmm. And even we would see sometimes the CEO of Facebook, right? When he went in front of Congress, he wore a suit.
Right, right.
So it's like you have to know your audience and tailor your style, your presence to that audience. You are there to serve your audience.
It's so true. I mean, most of the time I wear a skirt and a suit jacket. And I do that because of microphones. So people say, why? I don't see you in dresses too often. I suppose it would be because the whole... You know, it's easier when you have a skirt on to hook your microphone to. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, when I did the TEDx talk for women, right, that whole environment is a much different, more hip. And so I wore my leather pants and my leather jacket because it's something that I felt was more appropriate for that venue.
Absolutely.
I'm still the same person. My message is the same. When you go see me at my ranch, I'm not, certainly not in skirts and suits.
Right.
But so it's understanding the environment. I talk about mm-hmm. how important your environment is. I think that's so true. And I think it's also a matter of respect.
It is.
Respect for the audience. I think I see people get on stage in a more formal environment mm-hmm. and, you know, it looks like they're wearing the same thing they wore the last 4 days. It's wrinkled and it's, you know, it doesn't match. The shoes are scuffed. And I maybe it's my generation, but I look at that as, it's the opposite of a sign of respect. And I think it's important to be respectful of people that are inviting you to share with their audience, right?
Absolutely. So exactly. So one of my clients is Virgin Orbit, and they're much more casual. They're a Richard Branson company. So when I go there, I'm in jeans and t-shirts or shirts, whatever that is. But you really do need to tailor that message to the audience. There's also four questions you can ask yourself about your audience. It's what's most important to them. That's the first question. So if you don't know, ask people in their inner circle who does know. Mm-hmm. And then what are they willing to compromise? Are they more people who are willing to compromise cost, schedule, quality? Where might they be willing to compromise? Also, how much detail do they need? A lot of times I will see, especially more technical experts, give too much detail. And they might have 8-point font and fill up an entire chart.
Oh my God, on the screen.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, my husband tends to be that way. It's like, honey, not so many words. I use many more pictures.
Right, exactly. Pictures or bigger font.
Yes.
Because then as they're talking, they think the audience is with them and knows where they're looking or what they're talking about, but you don't know. You're trying to make sense of all that information. So how much detail do they really need,
right,
based on the purpose of your presentation? And then also what hooks them? Because in the first, you maybe got 60 to 90 seconds to really bring an audience in. So what's going to really hook them to pay attention to you?
Yeah. Lately I've been doing an exercise where I ask all the experts to stand in the room. And of course, very few people stand up. And then I challenge them all to stand up because I say, nobody's walked in your shoes.
Yes.
You are all experts. You've all had successes. You've all had learning opportunities. And it really has made a big difference in engagement level for the audience, because I say, yeah, I'm here today, but so could you be, so there's no difference here. I'm sharing my life experience and things, but you are all experts. And so stand in your own power.
I love that.
It gives them position, power, giving power back to the individuals in the audience.
I so appreciate that about you. And I saw you do that on your TEDx talk, because I was in the audience and I was like, oh, I love that, because I have seen so many experts who are playing big actually not give the power back, actually take the power from the people. And you are like giving them the power and saying, no, you stand in your own authority. You have authority. You have an expertise.
And I think that's, part of educating people to be, one of the taglines I've had, you're the CEO of your own life. But it's, unless people get, it's like people almost need permission to be confident.
Yes.
It's crazy. But I fought against it for a lot of years, and now it's like, okay, I'm going to give them permission to be powerful in their own right.
That's right.
And if it gets them to that point where they go, oh, this feels pretty good, I'm going to stay here, then it's all worth it. So talk about a couple of bullet points related to the presentation.
Yes.
I think people are waiting to hear something about that.
Yes. Okay. So you always start with your audience. So asking yourself those four questions and finding that information out at a minimum. Then you can go to write your presentation. So often people just start writing their presentation, but then are they writing it for their audience or for themselves? So when you start to write your presentation, you have to think about, how do I bring my audience in? So what's a great attention getting opening? And that might be a picture or a story, like telling a vulnerable story to bring them in. You might even do a quote or ask a question. So an attention getting opening is critical. And the next thing you need to do is a good executive summary. That's that bottom line up front. And I say that it needs to include three things. So one is your purpose. Why are you there? Are you there to update them on something, inform them of something, inspire them? What is in it for them to listen? So that's the bottom line. Is this going to be cost savings? Is it going to be, a big impact on their career? What is that hook to get them to listen? Because it's going to impact them in some positive way. And then the final is, what do you want at the end of your presentation? Because then people know how to listen. If you want a decision, they know, I better listen. I'm going to need the information to make a decision. If you want them to commit to something, they better listen for that. So it helps them to funnel how to listen. And this is, I always say, put this, if you do use PowerPoint, you can put that on a chart, because if your presentation gets cut, a lot of times in the corporate world, people think they have 30 minutes and they're like, you just have five. And this is the chart to go to, because it's all summarized right there.
That's a really good point. I like that, Sharon. I don't think I do that. That's a good point though. Or if your PowerPoint gets screwed up, you have one slide you can stay up there for your whole talk. That's helpful. I like that.
Exactly.
As an example, for those of you, I just spoke at Case Managers Association of America. So these are people that handle clients that are in hospitals or in nursing homes and their families, right? So it's a very caregiving profession. And so when I went to speak to them, they wanted me to talk to them about my normal stuff. And so I kicked off the presentation saying, you know, this is, number one, you're all experts. And then, you know, this is a room full of caregivers. And so you give. And do you ever feel like you're just exhausted at the end of the day? And of course, everybody's hands up. And I said, so I'm going to ask you to give me the next hour for you to concentrate on taking care of yourself.
I love that.
Self-care. And most specifically, you know, right now, 60%, well, the top 60% of employees, when they were asked, what's your number one stress, 60% of them said money. Still today, with record low unemployment, with economy at a high, financial stress is still the number one stress for employees, just released by PwC. And so I said, you know, I want you to think about self-care, but more specifically, we're going to be talking about financial stability as as self-care. So, you know, it's like kind of like, because it's like, why is she here, right? Because I'm not a case manager. And so I was able to engage them in that. And then at, I said, at the end of the day, if you just have one idea, one thing that you can do, one small step that can improve your finance, one small step can create major rewards.
Well, that's an excellent example of summarizing your presentation and pulling in your audience and then saying what you want from them. I just want you to take one small step today. Then your audience knows and they think, wow, I can do that. That's only one small step. I can do that.
Well, particularly when you're walking in or you're being presented with something that's a kind of a foreign subject. Like they, I doubt many of them came there last expecting to get a financial seminar. It was a holiday party.
Yeah.
But that's what they asked me to do. And they said, this is what we want you to talk about. I'm okay, how can I make this fun, right? So part of that is engaging them and giving them what the expectations are. And in their vernacular.
In their
caregivers,
language.
They give. I want you to give to yourself, you know, care for yourself.
So. And that really speaks to them, because if everyone's always pouring themselves out, and it's kind of even in leaders, in corporate leaders, and a lot of times they're not getting a lot of appreciation. They're so busy and doing things and leading, and it's true. It's like, take time for you. That's what we say in our programs is, if it's a week-long program or 3 days or whatever that might be, we know that's a long time, but this is time for you to give care to yourself and to receive from us that you don't have to give this week.
Right, right. Oh, that's great. I love that. So tell them how they can find you.
Oh, well, it's easy to find us. We are in the process of updating our website, but right now, and always, our website will be
www.insideoutlearning.com. Insideoutlearning.com.
Also, my email is sharon@insideoutlearning.com. And my assistant's phone number, Samantha, is 480-822-9939. And we also have, we're on all the social media under Inside Out Learning.
That's great. And so you're going to hang out with me for another recording. For those of you that are not part of the Facebook private group, Playbook Movement, please join, because we're going to continue. We're going to talk about some personal habits and personal things. So what's the next chapter for you? What does 2020 look like to you, Sharon?
So 2020 looks like, we're so excited about this, is that
we're probably going to be airing this in January.
Oh, so, good.
Fabulous.
All right. So my book, The Authenticity Code, will be out next year. So we'll be releasing a book. Also, at the same time, we're going to be releasing a digital program. So one thing is, for the most part, I've focused in the corporate world for many years. And now I want to take all of this wonderful knowledge to the individuals And so when you can buy a book, or you could also buy a very affordable digital training program. So if you want to learn more about your presence and your audience and your presentation, you can do that self-directed with you and your computer. And we're really excited. We're going to release those at the same time.
Fantastic. Well, that's exciting. So what little last bit of advice for people that are watching or listening, they might just be starting a business. They might have a successful business, but how, you know, the information that you show can help take them to the next level. So.
I would say that just continue to believe in yourself. One of the most powerful things that I have found that took my business to the next level is I often felt or had a mind track. I know Sharon wrote an incredible book called Outwitting the Devil. So a lot of our mindsets that can trip us up. And there was a lot of insecurity in my own mindset, you know, wondering if I was worthy or deserving. And you have to face your fear of failure, your fear of success. And I would say, keep believing in yourself, keep working on that and on your presence, because I think that's a key component to your success and your presence, is when you believe in yourself, not from an arrogant perspective, but from a confident perspective.
So you heard it here, believe in yourself. I think you've probably heard that from me before, but that confidence, turning that fear into faith, that personal success equation I share, passion, talent, right association,
yes,
taking the action, but having faith in yourself, faith that what you're doing is needed and necessary and that you're on the right track. So thank you so much, Sharon. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Her contact information will be in the show notes. And please join us in the private Facebook group for the rest when we continue this conversation. Thanks for
Fabulous.
Being with me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast. Please subscribe to iTunes and leave us a review, as well as join us in other areas of social media, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Sharon Lecter, and for Facebook, author Sharon Lecter. Thank you so much and have a fabulous day.